Hello, I'm Georgina Marshall, Global Head of Research at ISS, and welcome to the June Proxy Bulletin podcast for the Asia-Pacific region. Today's focus is the Australian market's small but busy April and May mini-season, and on what it might presage for the Australian main voting season later in the year. Joining me from Sydney with a roundup of the recent ASX 300 AGM activity and other developments is Vaz Kolesnikov, ISS Head of Research for Australia and New Zealand. Vaz, how many meetings did ISS cover during mini-season this year, and what were some highlights?
Thank you, Georgina, and hello to everyone listening in to this Australian Market podcast. During this two-month mini-season, we issued reports on 42 annual general meetings of companies in the ASX 300 index. There were also three M&A transactions, which included private equity buyouts of accounting software company MYOB and underperforming hospital operator Healthscope. There was also a scrip merger of Australian packaging giant Amcor with US-based Bemis. The combined Amcor group will relocate its primary listing from the ASX to the New York Stock Exchange and will likely be included in the top 200 of the S&P 500 index.
Okay, thanks. And Vaz, mini-season was your first opportunity to assess the impact of the recent scandals in the Australian banking sector and the regulatory reactions to them. What's the mood in the market?
Yes, the mini-season followed in the footsteps of both a controversial 2018 AGM season and the public testimony and final report from the Australian Royal Commission into misconduct in the banking, superannuation and financial services industry. The mood in the market last year was pensive, to say the least, as misconduct and poor governance in Australia's large financials entered the public debate and culminated in strikes, what we call votes of 25% or more against the remuneration reports, at three of the big four banks in December. National Australia Bank received the largest vote in recent memory, more than 88% against its remuneration practices. The CEO and chair lost their jobs following this defeat, although some shareholders may also be questioning how the remaining directors can justify their positions. It is worthwhile noting here that Australia's largest listed entity, Commonwealth Bank, did not have the same problems with its shareholder voting in 2018. Commonwealth was the first of the big four banks to experience a large strike in 2016, with a continued flow of governance issues, and it also withdrew its equity grant resolution to the CEO as it was unlikely to pass. Since then, the CEO resigned and the board has been refreshed under the new and prominent chairman, Catherine Livingston.
And what other fallout do you expect from the Royal Commission's findings?
For listeners in other markets who are not familiar with the report, I'd like to highlight a blunt statement by the Commissioner in his final report as he reflected on the testimony before him in 2018 regarding the behaviour of Australian financial organisations in dealing with customers. He said, "Very often the conduct has broken the law. And if it has not broken the law, the conduct has fallen short of the kind of behaviour the community not only expects of financial services entities, but is also entitled to expect of them." So despite this harsh conclusion, the legal consequences from the Royal Commission are still unclear, and there is a risk that the outrage in the community will dissipate over time and little will change. So as I understand it, the Australian Securities and Investments Commission, ASIC, is investigating certain matters, and the Australian Prudential Regulation Authority, APRA, is still considering its preferred course of action, although this would likely appear to impact shareholder returns more than bank insiders, whose conduct and governance has been the subject of criticism. So 2018 was an extremely challenging year for the banks and other financial companies, with knock-on effects into 2019 as all boards of ASX-listed entities were forced to digest the implications of poor governance and their companies, on their companies and on shareholder returns.
And as you've mentioned somewhat, votes on remuneration have become a real focal point in recent proxy seasons in Australia. How much do you expect remuneration to continue to be a flashpoint?
Well, Georgina, the biggest stick wielded by shareholders in the Australian market is the vote on the remuneration report. This resolution is the ballot items that directors appear to listen to the most, as it deals with the most heavily debated issues of executive performance and company results, and of course, the impact of governance on the company. In 2018, we saw a record 26 strikes against remuneration reports at ASX 300 companies. For the first time, the largest financials in Australia were impacted across the board, including the life insurer AMP, general insurer QBE, the three big four banks, namely ANZ, National Australia Bank and Westpac, Australia's largest telco, Telstra, and property giants, Westfield and Goodman. Our figures also show that a total of 16% of ASX 300 companies reported reported votes against their remuneration reports in excess of 20%. I do not recall another year in the Australian market like 2018.
And did the large number of those remuneration strikes in 2018 impact board members at all?
Well, the wave of dissent in 2018 had implications for directors, for whom it is becoming quite apparent that the bar is being raised by investors in requiring directors to act in shareholder interests by taking affirmative action to stamp out poor governance, ethics and conduct. Unfortunately, well, the Australian market is somewhat unique because director re-elections are staggered over 3 years. Namely, all directors are not required to stand for re-election each year. This has the effect of leading to inconsistent re-election results over time. So some directors may encounter dissent in shareholder votes in 1 year, while remaining directors may experience elevated shareholder votes against in future years, or alternatively, they may simply slip under the radar. So several groups in the Australian market are presently advocating for a change in the rules to require directors to stand annually for re-election, as seen in the United Kingdom and United States. So in last year's voting, a major life insurer and wealth business, AMP, two of the three directors who stood for re-election withdrew their nominations ahead of the AGM, and the chairman resigned from the AMP board. And over the following year, she also retired from her two remaining ASX-listed boards. Meanwhile, other directors remain steadfast on the AMP board and are yet to be subject to a vote on their re-election. So at the 2019 AMP AGM, all nominees were new directors being elected for the first time.
And so what signs did you see during the just finished mini-season that 2018's investor unhappiness has carried into 2019?
Well, of the 42 AGMs during mini-season, the greatest scrutiny was focused on AMP and QBE. Last year, both companies underperformed and introduced a new incentive structure that removed long-term performance metrics, with vesting of equity simply subject to time. These structures were overwhelmingly rejected by shareholders, with substantial votes against at most companies which implemented such plans. This year, it is evident through our engagement that the boards of AMP and QBE and other companies which with such combined incentive plans have sought to address their prior errors in judgment. Many appear to be reverting to the expected fixed STI-LTI remuneration structure and incorporating short and long-term performance metrics. The question for shareholders going forward is whether the performance hurdles are consistent with their expectations. In other words, whether they are sufficiently rigorous to represent a good result. So both AMP and QBE recorded 10% of votes against their remuneration reports at their 2019 AGMs, while QBE also disclosed a 22% vote against the grant of rights to the CEO, as this was made under the discredited structure allowing equity to be subject to time-based vesting only. QBE Deputy Chairman John Green also received a slightly elevated vote of 8% against his re-election, as he was the former chair of the Remuneration Committee, responsible for the introduction of the problematic incentive scheme in 2018. The most contentious aspect of the AMP AGM this year was the election of directors, in particular new chairman David Murray. Despite a significant sign-on bonus structured to the new AMP CEO, which would ordinarily be expected to have heightened concerns, AMP shareholders may have been willing to overlook this with a fresh pair of eyes on the business in the aftermath of the Royal Commission. A fresh controversy emerged at AMP with the sale of its iconic life business, representing a substantial portion of the whole of AMP. Some investors were suggesting that due to the size of the life business, shareholder approval was required for a sale to proceed, while board and management asserted that ASX compliance cleared the sale without the requirement for shareholder approval under the listing rules. The sale was seen to be driven by the new chairman, and certain shareholders were targeting against his re-election. So, despite the noise ahead of the AGM, Chairman David Murray received 87% support, and all other directors were elected comfortably.
Okay, interesting. And what are some of the other notable AGMs from the mini season that you wanted to mention?
The mini AGM season includes meetings for a few substantial companies, including oil and gas producers Woodside Petroleum and Santos, global iron ore producer Rio Tinto, Monopoly Sydney Airport, and obviously AMP and QBE. Woodside received a strike against its remuneration in 2016, driven by concerns over flaws in the structure that allowed retesting of LTIs and vesting when shareholder returns were substantially lower and financial results were materially down on multi-billion dollar write-offs. While attempting to make changes since that time to meet shareholder expectations, an elevated 10% vote against the resolution this year may suggest that investors remain concerned with certain problematic practices. This time, it could be surmised that shareholders have concerns over poor transparency and disclosure, including in performance metrics, which are expected to act in their interests. It is also possible that some shareholders are questioning an excessive 50% of the total incentive plan being linked to what is stated as individual KPIs and are equally poorly disclosed to demonstrate how these are aligned with results and shareholders. In this regard, poor and limited disclosure is common amongst many companies in the Australian market, which tends to result in elevated votes against some remuneration resolutions and even strikes with 25% or more against. Santos, on the other hand, performed very well in 2018 since its near collapse in 2016 with new chairman, refreshed board, new CEO, and overhauled management team working towards targets which shareholders may readily recognise as addressing previously high production costs. While the description of metrics and outcomes are well presented, again, there is no disclosure of the actual targets to be achieved. Nevertheless, Santos reported its first statutory profit after several years of losses.
And any other trends of note on the remuneration front in particular, Vas?
In this mini season, there were four strikes and elevated votes against certain equity grants. ASX 100 mineral sands producer Iluka Resources, ASX 100 construction materials manufacturer Adelaide Brighton, ASX 200 communications and IT service provider Speedcast, and ASX 300 oil and gas company Sundance Energy received strikes against their remuneration reports with votes in excess of 30%. Both Adelaide Brighton and Speedcast underperformed in 2018. and demonstrated similar issues which often concern shareholders. Namely, both boards exercise discretion to amend STI and LTI metrics and allow bonuses to be paid despite minimum hurdles not being met. Retention bonuses were also disclosed at Adelaide Brighton, and LTI vesting was accelerated in full on resignation of executives of both companies, although highly unlikely that vesting would occur if rights remained on foot. Sundance Energy received a strike at the 2018 AGM. It recently recorded another strike at the 2019 AGM and also a 35% vote against the equity grant to the CEO. This again reflects shareholder dissatisfaction with a fundamental disconnect between executive and shareholder outcomes. After another poor year with its share price falling nearly 50% and losses increasing, STIs and additional transaction-specific one-off bonuses were paid, and even LTIs vested at underperforming levels, where 50% of the equity vests at the 30th percentile relative to peers. Iluka implemented a new combined remuneration structure, combining the STI and the LTI into one bonus. Shareholder concerns this year may have been aimed at the number of problematic aspects of this plan, including 67% of the total incentive being based on the short term, only one longer term performance metric remains, although the rigor is reduced materially with 100% vesting of equity on achieving a less than stellar 50th percentile result amongst peers, a look back to add dividends in the performance period on unvested shares, reduced weighting to financial performance from 50% to 35% of the total, and an absence of disclosure of specific performance targets. So a trend witnessed in the 2018 AGM season amongst smaller ASX 3 companies in the mining related sector was the appearance of a significant one-off equity grant to CEOs, which appeared more akin to a catch-up after several years of underperformance and no doubt low bonuses. So in this mini-season, the board of ASX 200 Resolute Mining proposed what it described as a, quote, special issuance of performance rights, end quote, to the CEO valued at $3.3 million, in addition to the bonus opportunities already in place. So on this occasion, the resolution was withdrawn by the company, which advised the market that proxy votes ahead of the meeting were 53% against this resolution. The company went on to say that it will consult with shareholders, quote, to agree on amendments to ensure broader shareholder support, end quote. Investors may want to question the reason for the grant as appropriate bonus structures are already in place, and why an additional incentive is required. So equally, voting at the recent 2019 AGM of ASX 100 gaming and slot manufacturer Aristocrat continues to demonstrate a persisting concern for the company's LTI structure to the CEO. A substantial component of the LTI continues to be unhurdled and no performance conditions are disclosed, being inconsistent with the Australian market. At the company's 2018 AGM, 28% of shareholders voted against this resolution, and concerns have again been reflected this year in a 26% vote against the equity grant at the 2019 AGM. So in summary, these examples show a growing trend in the Australian market of investors placing increased scrutiny on the existence and rigor of performance conditions. After all, as one influential fund manager once said, quote, you get what you target, end quote. And as we commented in the 2018 proxy season review, some boards continue to struggle to appropriately justify remuneration outcomes to their investors. This issue comes to the fore when shareholder returns are obviously weak, and this fact remains in evidence in the 2019 mini AGM season.
Okay, Vaz, thank you for that. And a lot going on there on remuneration, as you say, and a lot of signs of shareholder interest and concern as well. And so just changing gear now into a different topic. How are shareholders and companies addressing environmental and social concerns in the Australian market?
Yes, indeed. Investor interest in climate-related disclosure actions continues to escalate. However, social discourse regarding climate action in this country has only truly spiked in the run-up to the recent government election. The opposition Labor Party, which ran on a platform that included addressing climate change issues, did not win. But a national debate on climate change has well and truly been kicked off. So while many Australian companies are making increased headroads in addressing climate issues, including disclosure of practices and policies and actions, shareholder recourse is largely limited to closed-door direct engagements. Due to limitations under Australian law, shareholder proposals are never actually voted on at AGMs, and at best, disclosure of proxy votes cast on proposals is the only indication of broader shareholder opinion that might sway boards and management. So there were seven companies in the ASX 300 in 2018 with ESG-related shareholder proposals, and we currently do not expect this to change substantially in 2019. In this mini-season, two companies, QBE and Rio Tinto, had climate-related proposals, with votes indicating only 8% and 6% support, respectively. So in the case of QBE, the insurer announced a new group energy policy to phase out direct insurance for thermal coal customers by 2030. Rio Tinto, on the other hand, convinced shareholders through active climate roadshows and direct engagement regarding its climate initiatives to ensure sufficient proxy votes against the shareholder proposal at its 2019 AGM. On a more technical matter, anticipated climate proposals at Woodside and Santos were rejected by the companies due to technical shortcomings in agency agreements used by the shareholder proponents to act as agents on behalf of certain other shareholders. So, in concluding on environmental and social proposals, our engagements with boards to date suggest that it is unlikely that there will be any material increases in shareholder proposals in the 2019 AGM season, although still possible. We understand that ASX 10 grocery and retail giant Woolworths may be subject to several proposals, which, as in 2018, will likely relate to social and human rights issues. So under Woolworths' leadership, the group has been the first supermarket globally to issue a certified $400 million green bond to be allocated to renewable energy, energy efficiency, and green building. The group has also introduced several market-leading efficient initiatives for its employees, including offering support and financial assistance for mental well-being and financial hardship, particularly those struggling with the extremely high costs of payday lending debts. Well, but on the other hand, Woolworths is one of the largest owners of poker or slot machines, which continue to contribute to considerable distress in certain lower socioeconomic communities.
Thanks, Faz. And any final thoughts on the Australian mini-season?
Yes. Many of the issues raised last year have carried on into 2019. We saw some come up in the mini-season and expect to see more in the main season later in the year. Although it is fair to say that as each year passes, more Australian boards and directors are undertaking more engagement with shareholders and other stakeholders. My conclusion is that this trend can only benefit transparency and collaboration in the long run.
Okay, and that is it for our Australian post-mini-season wrap-up. Thank you so much, Vaz, and thanks to you, our listeners. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Please watch your email for the next instalment and send any feedback or questions to bulletin@issgovernance.com. Thanks again, and goodbye for now.